You are listening to the Unexpected Adventures in North Alabama podcast, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network. Welcome back to another episode of Unexpected Adventures in North Alabama. I am so excited to talk with Natasha McCrary from 1818 Farms in Mooresville. Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Malia.
Yeah. Well, before we jump in, will you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, we're actually in Mooresville, Alabama, which is northern Alabama near in between Decatur and Huntsville. And I'm a native Alabamian. So I was born and raised in Florence, Alabama. So I've been here most of my life in Birmingham. So just, you know, all I know is really Alabama. We started 1818 Farms 10 years ago. So this is our 10-year anniversary. I tell people it feels like 20 when I say it's 10 years. But lots of things have happened since we started the farm. And, you know, just I'm not only a mom and a wife, but I'm a farmer and a business owner. So I have wear a lot of hats.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're picking up new hats as you go along with 1818 Farms too, which we'll talk about coming up. Well, cool. That is so exciting. And 10 years. I remember when you founded 1818 Farms. So that's really cool. Well, let's just jump right in. You mentioned 2012 is when y'all began. So what prompted your family to take on this venture?
Well, really, in 2011, we were on a family vacation, and my middle son was 8 years old at the time, and he just fell in love with a South Down baby doll sheep, which, for those of y'all listening, they look like giant little smiling teddy bears. They're the cutest things you'll ever see, and all he could talk about was owning a sheep, and, you know, you kind of think as a child that, you know, you want something and it goes away, but that's all he could talk about was the sheep, and so I said, let's get a book, and we got stories, book about sheep and, you know, reading about the breeds and what you'd have to do to take care of it. And so he just had a lot of interest in that. So I thought that would be a great time. My kids were getting older at the time. My youngest was about to start kindergarten. So I felt like that was a really good time for us to start a family project, you know, together, and really a great way to teach our kids about sustainability, how to have a business. You know, in the beginning, they were selling eggs, you know, just little things like that, that you were trying to teach them. So I would have never thought where we are today with that little, you know, I just thought we were going to have kind of a hobby farm, and it's turned out to be so much more than a hobby farm.
Yeah. Cause now y'all are known statewide, nationwide now. So it did turn into something amazing. That is so cool. So how many sheep do you have now since you start off with the one?
Okay. Yeah. So now over the years, I've delivered over like 54, I think, lambs. So, but some are here, but the majority have go into other, I would call them hobby farmers who are wanting to help preserve this historic breed because the breed was almost extinct in the 1990s. So, you know, I'm really selective in where the lambs go and how they're placed. I mean, I do like it. You'd think you're adopting a child from me, the detailed interview I go through. But right now we have around 17 adults. So, you know, that varies from, you know, we started with four and then we added, you know, two more and then a ram. And then I the first few babies, I kept those. So some of the sheep here, you know, they've lived their whole lives here. So, you know, they were not born off site, a lot of my flock, other than the foundation flock. So now about 17 or so. So I really kind of at max and where our space is for anyone who's thinks you have to have a ton of land to have a farm, we're on about 3 acres. We're just very intentional about how we manage the land, and we have different paddocks, which we implement rotational grazing. So that way you're able to keep them moving to fresh grass. It helps cut down on the parasite load and all that. So you don't have to have a huge area to be able to have a flock of sheep.
Well, now you mentioned you personally deliver the lambs, correct?
Yes, because really we live, typically when you have a problem, it's always at 2 a.m. I mean, it does never fail. I mean, I'm like, can you have a problem at 2 p.m.? So yeah, I mean, I think this year I had to pull, you know, half that were born, they were turned incorrectly. So you just learn how to do that. I mean, over time, by the time a vet could get to us, you know, my vet's 40 minutes away, you're already past the point of no return is what I tell people. You know, you have to learn how to do that. So that's something I never dreamed 10 years ago I could pull out a lamb, but I've done my fair share of that over the years. And it just seems like, you know, you just have to learn to do that. If you want to be a really, really excellent at animal husbandry, that's something you're just going to have to do. Like, I remember the first time I gave a shot, I thought I was going to pass out. You know, I was not nurse material, but, you know, there's so many things. And I have a wonderful vet who is into really teaching, because he knows, you know, he can't be everywhere. I mean, usually when you have a large, it's not like a dog or a cat, you just pop in your car and take somewhere. He's just been a great mentor in teaching me how to be the best that I can be with animal husbandry.
Yeah, that is so cool. And you're so right. Cause my dad, I grew up on a farm out in Lawrence County, and we had cows, and they always got out when you were dressed up to go somewhere when it was raining or on a holiday. I mean, it was like, do y'all have calendars?
Yes.
You know, it's like they just knew that this is not a, you know, opportune time here. So that is so cool. And no wonder you feel like, you know, your people are adopting a child. It's like you were there for the delivery and birth. That's so cool.
Yes. And we're just, you know, I really want them to go to somewhere. It's going to be a long-term home. Most all of mine, I've had just, you know, maybe one or two where, you know, they couldn't keep them, but most of them, I mean, I think probably a month ago, I heard from one of the first lambs that I actually sold, and he's over near Memphis. And, you know, just hearing the stories, and I'm in contact with everyone who has these sheep, you know, most everyone, if they have questions, but it really is, you know, you want to place them, especially when you're trying to preserve something that, you know, is a precious little lamb that if they were almost extinct, you really want to be careful that they're going to the correct home.
Right. Right. Yeah. That is so cool though. I love that. Now, you also hold some workshops and events like the sheep shearing, and I have yet to make it to one of those yet. Do you want to tell us about the sheep shearing that you do?
Well, before COVID, we always had a sheep shearing event. And so it's a great day where, you know, the farm's open. You can come and do a demo. Now I have a new shearer. So it's the one thing that I did during COVID, my shearer retired. He was older. And so we hope, you know, we're not 100% sure we can have a sheep shearing a day next year, because a shearer has to be willing to demo, you know. So hopefully, but it's just a fun day where you can, you know, see the wool and see how happy the sheep are once it comes off. Like, a lot of people think, oh, the shearing is inhumane. No, it's inhumane if you didn't shear, because, you know, if you think about, you had like a 6-inch wool coat on in the end of March, you know, when it's warm, they're so happy. Like, even the old ones are doing little donkey kicks after they're shorn, because they're like, oh my gosh, I feel amazing now. But yeah, that's a really fun event. This year, what we did, since we could, our shearer was, you know, it was a schedule where he couldn't do it on a weekend, is we just had a big open farm day on May 7th. And we know we're going to make that an annual day. And that was just, you could come and walk the gardens, and the lambs were around 3 to 4 weeks old. So we held the lambs, you know, to pet the lambs. And it was just nice. It was a perfect day that day to welcome guests back, really, because when we do workshops, that's kind of limited maybe to 16 to 18 people. So, you know, this was a day where you can have more people and just make a full day of it. You know, anyone who wanted to come can come. And, you know, there's no charge for that. We just try and do that as kind of our give back, so that anyone who did want to come would be able, you know, be accessible to them.
Yeah, that is so cool. And I think I had tickets for that event that was canceled in 2020. So I got to put it back on my list. So how much does that wool that they shear off, that he shears off, how much does that typically weigh when they're...
Well, it varies year to year. And, you know, it's funny, some of the sheep that as they get older, they produce less wool. Certain colors, the black ones never produce as much, other than Elvis, my ram. He always has really nice fleece. But typically, Elvis, the stable length on a dark one is much shorter than white. Now, I don't know why, that's how it is. But, you know, this year, I would say we skirt it too, which is, if you just took the whole fleece and you threw it in a bag, Mm-hmm. That includes vegetable matter. Like what we do is when we finish and we weigh it, we've skirted everything and then we have that weight and it goes to a mill in Pennsylvania. So this year we probably sent maybe 10, 16 by 16 boxes. And I can't remember the exact weights, but I mean, we weighed them, but I mean, that's quite a bit.
Yeah.
You know, you're talking maybe two fleeces per box or, you know, and it's really crammed in there. You know, it's tight. Yeah. But it's enough, like we will have that wool. Part of it will be spun into yarn, and we use that as those to hang like our botanical wax sachets that we make using the dried flowers. And then also we have it just cleaned and turned into roving, and that is put into our sheep to nest wool filled suet feeders. And that's where you have a little suet feeder and the wool's in there and the birds, you hang it near your bird feeder and the birds come and get it and they pull it out and they go build their nest with it. So those are kind of the end products with the wool. And initially in the beginning, we wanted to sell the yarn. Well, there's so much cost into producing that yarn. It's almost not accessible for people. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like,
yeah.
When you look at caring for a sheep for a year, the feed, the, you know, the vet bills, the shearing bill, and then the time, like just to skirt the wool can take you up to two people up to 12 to 14 hours. So 28 hours. So, and that's not even until we've shipped it to the mill, you know? So I would love to be able to offer the yarn, but it's really not cost effective unless you have someone who can afford it, because you can't be offering something that you really aren't making a return on. And we're able to utilize it in the wax sachets as the hanger and the other things. And it can still be enjoyed, but it's affordable still.
Right. So do you know what the mill in Pennsylvania, what it goes out to be used for? Do you have any idea like where it goes after that?
Oh no, it all comes back to us.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Gotcha. So once it's spun, it comes straight back to us. So yeah. So, and they do lots of other things, but no, yeah, we send it in and they do everything there. In the beginning, we did some washing ourselves, but it is just so labor intensive, even that.
Yeah.
And they are set up. It's a great company, farm that we've used for years. And that's kind of what they do is, you know, they're just big into their, they have their own goats, they have sheep, they have rabbits. I mean, they're great, this mill. And, you know, we really, that's kind of also something that's a dying art is finding people who can do spinning and have a mill. It's just not, you know, that's just not that need when there's fast, I call it fast fashion versus slow fashion. You know, you just go to the store and you get your cashmere sweater. I mean, and I tell people, if you get it for $100, you have just landed a bargain, because I know how much really work goes into any type of yarn to get it there.
Yeah. That is so cool though. This, like you mentioned, the sustainability of, you know, the fleece, and then it comes back to you and then you use it with other things. That's so neat. I love that. So what are some of the other animals that you have on the farm?
Well, we have chickens. We don't have, our chickens are kind of aging out. I mean, a lot of ours are probably 8 years old. We're not getting a lot of eggs. They're kind of aging out. That's a long time for a chicken to live. So we have chickens, and then we have two little miniature potbelly pigs, or, you know, they're Clover and Mr. Riggs. They're super cute. We have one goat, Farrah Fawcett, who's naughty and so naughty. And then we have the Great Pyrenees. So that's all, you know, all of our animals that we have there. You know, at one point we had maybe 50 or 60 hens, but we're down to like 7 or 8 just because they, you know, they've just gotten older over the years and, you know, they don't live as long as like our oldest sheep is 10 and a half. So, you know, that their lifespan is different. A lot of the, a couple that we have, my middle son hatched them in his room in an incubator. I mean, that's how, yeah, he wanted to buy a computer. And so I said, well, you're going to have to find a way to pay for that. You know? So he got an incubator and he was like selling baby chicks. It's hilarious, you know? So, yeah. So it's interesting. You know, we're hoping to add some more chicks back next year. We were going to do it this year and then we just never got around to it. And so maybe next year, because I do like to have fresh eggs.
Yeah. So you've got a whole family full of entrepreneurs there. You,
they are here. They are here for sure.
I love it. Well, what other kind of workshops do you hold there on the farm?
Okay, so workshops are really one of my favorite things that we do. And we just finished our summer series of workshops, and they're called a Bloom Stroll and Bouquet Workshop. And we usually do 8 to 10 of those a season. It just depends on kind of how the timeline goes. And those, which you been a guest before. Yes. Those are a lot of fun. It's about a 2-hour workshop, and you come to the grounds. We're going to have 2 buckets cut for each person, with a filler, the focals, spikes, disc, air, flowers. We're going to talk about how to build a balanced bouquet. And then we're going to take time and walk through the field and identify all of the, you know, different flowers that are growing, how the best way to cut them. Then we take a little break and we go through and you can add to your bouquet. And then we come back and build just a lovely bouquet. And a really, I try and pick out like a special vase every year and something that's a keepsake, you know, so we do that. And that's just, people love coming and like connecting with nature and having those 2 hours. It's an intimate size. Like I try 16. It's kind of my magic number. I've had gone up a few this year to 17 when like somebody just couldn't get a ticket and I'd be like, okay, we'll do 17. I can do up to 20, but I kind of feel you lose that intimacy of the one-on-one. Just, it's funny. You would not think from 17 to 20, but I do. And I like for people to be able to really feel like it's a special event. So we do that. Those workshops, those usually go live. We try to have them the 1st of March. This year it was a little bit later because I had a son graduating college and one graduating high school. We were trying to figure out where everyone's going to be. So typically, and the best way to find out about those is to just go to our website and scroll to the bottom and sign up for our email list. It's like a priority contact. So any event that we host here, whether it's the farm day, a workshop, if it's a Christmas sale, anything like that, we're going to email our priority contact first, probably about a week before we go into social media. So that's the best way to know, because typically the workshops sell out pretty fast. So that's what I would recommend, because they are sort of hard to get into them, but really, because we offer so many bouquet subscriptions in Northern Alabama, or I should say like Decatur, Athens, Huntsville, you know, Hampton Cove, we really have to balance out how many workshops we have versus how many bouquets we're getting out that month. So it's really, I can't do many more just from that aspect of having supply to demand. So those are great. We're hoping to host a few fall workshops this year. We dry a lot of our flowers, just as you would a fresh cut for a bouquet. We're harvesting, like today, before this, I harvested probably 1,000 Oklahoma zinnias that are going to be going into something we're making. So we harvest just as though you're harvesting for fresh to have for dried. So we're working on a few workshops where you can make a wreath and leave with the dried flowers, where you can do, we have these cute little dried flower initials that you look adorable hanging in your house. And then we have a dry flower cloche. And then I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that I can offer one botanical dyeing class this year. I've been working on botanical dyeing since 2020 and really feel like I'm at the point now where I can handle teaching it. It's a lot. It's one of those things that looks so easy online when you show a video, but it's not that easy. Which a lot of that goes into the mortising and scouring of the fabric and getting it, the textile itself, ready. But I kind of feel like now I have a setup and a way to bring guests to that, and you would leave with a Habitat silk scarf. So those, I'm hoping I can get those maybe going in September, October. In the past, we've done the Della Robbia wreath workshops at the farm at Christmas, but it's just very hard because the bath line, we're so busy on that side at holiday to come and host those workshops. So those may kind of drop out and these fall workshops come in just when everybody's in general a little less busy. I think at holiday, for anyone even coming, you know how busy it is at the holidays, that this might be a little more enjoyable if you're able to come and, you know, have a relaxing, you know, afternoon or evening and create something without knowing I've got like all these other things, you know, to do.
Yeah. Oh, that, the dyeing the silk, that really interests me, because I've seen your, you know, the process of pulling those leaves off and or seeing the finished product too. That's so amazing. So what inspired you to get into that?
Well, it's funny. I can blame it on COVID. I don't know. You know how I'm always so busy. And when COVID happened, our sheep shearing was canceled. All the field trips were canceled. And we really launched our YouTube then. And I just was trying to get my hand our YouTube channel on anything different that I could, you know, educate people on. And I bought so many books on those and really started studying it. Because, you know, as anyone knows, you just really weren't doing, I mean, not that you weren't doing a lot. We were still working and doing a lot, but I had a little bit more free time on my hands at evenings. And, you know, so I just, it always interested me. I just had never taken the time. Most of our wool, when we spin it, we bring it back as white. The dark we put just into roving. So I had always in my mind thought, we grow flowers. I should be learning to dye textiles, you know, whether it's cellulose, you know, a cellulose or an animal fiber, you know, I really wanted to do that. And so I will say that kind of got me jump started, you know, that, hey, here's a little bit of time. And I had a lot of things that I wouldn't want to show anyone because there can be a lot of... There's a lot of trial and error with that. And we did we've started doing the resin, and there's a lot of error in that. I would not say a lot of trial. There's a lot of error in that. It's a lot harder. You know, I had someone bring me their daughter was married 2 weekends ago. I had someone bring yesterday too, and then wanting us to press their bouquets and then put them in resin platters or coasters. And one of them said, well, I was going to do it myself. And I was like, I am getting on my knees and thanking thanking that you did not try that, because that is not something you want to try. I mean, if you could see some of the pieces we created in the beginning, they're, some of them are in the trash can, but they look really good now, but it's a lot of, you know, it's just really a skill. It's one of those things. It's the working with the resin is almost, it's very difficult to even teach. It's just, you just have to keep trying it and trying it and figuring out what works in your environment and the resin and with the flowers. It and the botanical dyeing, I mean, it can be kind of difficult, but I think the resin might be harder because, you know, you can't bleach out a piece of resin. You can take a scarf back and hope you can bleach it. Although I will say, the fallacy is that, okay, natural dyes they fade over time. I made the most horrible Tennessee orange scarf last year. It was horrible. I got too much marigold in the dye bath and I was like, I'm going to bleach it. And I could not get that thing bleached. I mean, I put it in bleach for days and I was like, well, this dye is set for sure. So there are, it's just a lot of learning.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a positive thing that came out of COVID is learning how to do the dyeing. So you're saying then that the pieces that you use, are those made from the cloth? Is that made from the fleece from the sheep?
No, we've talked about it, but now, and that's really the reason I started to do it, was because of wanting to dye the yarn. But now most of the way that we need the yarn, we need it white, really. We talked about maybe doing the yarn as a hanger for some of the resin, like drilling a hole through it. And that could be something we might do, you know, like a really pretty pale sage green, which we can, you know, we could get easily, but it just kind of got me started. I wanted to learn to dye for the yarn, and now I've really barely dyed any yarn at all. But I find the scarves is very versatile and you get more space to work with. You know, you can't really, in a piece of yarn, it has to just be a color, where the scarf, you can take your botanicals and create, you know, a beautiful piece of art that's, you know, wearable. So I really like taking that and seeing, you're learning kind of the science behind why does this dogwood leaf give us this print, or why does this Cosmo give us this color? It's very interesting. And I think it's something that, you know, that's been around really for centuries, is that process of botanical dyeing. But, you know, it just, of course, probably, you know, when synthetic dyes came out, it was faster and easier. I mean, it's a lot more complex when you have to dye using the botanicals. And that's probably why it's just another example of fast fashion versus slow fashion.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited about that. Cause you mentioned I came on one of the bloom strolls this summer. That was one of my gifts to myself for my birthday. So thank you.
I hope you had a great time.
I did have a great time. And you're right. It was a very intimate setting. And of course, I came by myself. So I was at a table with a couple of other ladies who were there by themselves. And we friended each other on Instagram and we keep up with each other and comment on posts and everything. So I made 2 new friends out of that. So that was really cool.
And that's, the kind of thing I like, is just the connections of, you know, people. Because you're there, if you're visiting and you're doing this workshop, you have a love for nature, for flowers, you're going to have a common interest, more than likely.
Right.
I mean, I would be shocked if you didn't, just because y'all, you know what I mean? You took two yeah. hours out of your day to spend it with us. So it's a lot yeah. of people, like-minded people, I think.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I learned a lot about how to do a bouquet with, you know, what you use for fillers and what you use for focals, and then getting to go around and choose some things from the garden. I mean, it's just like a little fairy tale out there. That's what I think of. It's a fairy tale at 1818 Farms.
Well, that's what we like. We want people to say that, because it was, you know, we want it to kind of be like a magical memory, is what I tell
yeah.
people. That's what I really want yeah. people to get. Of course, I want them to be able to learn how to make a beautiful bouquet and be comfortable arranging flowers. But more than anything, I'm looking for you to make a memory, because once the bouquet is faded and gone, you still have that memory mm-hmm. to hold on.
Yep. Yep. I also learned from you too about making sure that the vase was clean enough to drink out of. And it just made sense that, you know, there's bacteria in there. So there's a little pro tip for y'all to wash your vases.
Yes. You always want to be very clean. I tell everyone that's you want to first step a very clean vase with fresh water.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I wouldn't have thought about that. I mean, you know, you typically wash it when it starts getting kind of dingy, but that was a really good tip that I have remembered. So thanks. Now, you mentioned some other products that y'all make. Do you want to tell us about those?
Yeah, so we have, like, our farm is in Mooresville, and then we have a corporate office, which is in Huntsville, and that's where our shea cream that a lot of people use, and then we have, you know, lip care, a cuticle balm, soaking for your bath, you know, then we have a gentleman's line. So we have a little bit of everything, and all that is made in Huntsville. You know, years ago, I started that in my kitchen, and then we've moved a few times, but luckily, you know, we moved last June, not this past, but June 21, into a new facility that we can actually all fit in, because we've been bursting out of the other one for a while. But it's everything is manufactured there, and then we ship out of Huntsville. So, and a lot of people say, well, why is it in Mooresville? And if you've been to Mooresville, it's a very historic town. I mean, you're not going to have a warehouse, you know, a kind of a warehouse look in Mooresville. And also, it's easier to first to find employees in Huntsville. You know, you'd have to make a commute into more if you were near Mooresville, and our kids were in school in Huntsville. So, you know, when they were small, that was a good solution for us. You know, it was a great place to be able to go after school if they needed to do homework and they had activity at 5:30. Whereas before, you know, we had to drive all the way to Mooresville, wait, and turn right back around and go. So that was sort of the reason also, just for the convenience of Huntsville. So that's, you know, everything goes out of there. And the team, you know, our team at the farm overlaps a little bit with the office, but primarily those of us at the farm are mainly here heavily February until in October, and then we're at the office more helping with holiday rush, and then we're back at the farm. So we kind of overlap some, but it's, you know, still we're all in communication. It's just, you know, you need two different types of facilities, you know what I'm saying, right. What we do.
Yeah. And if y'all haven't been to Mooresville, it is an adorable town, and it's older than the state, which was formed in 1819. So it's the oldest city in Alabama. And it's just very quaint, very Mayberry. You kind of think of like Mayberry a little bit. Yes. when you go to Mooresville. It's just very, very beautiful out there. So,
yeah, I encourage you, especially in the fall, once those leaves are changing, and just, it's a great way to walk around. There's a new bakery here in town, Dogwood and Magnolia. She opened not this March, but the March before. And typically she's open Wednesday through Saturday, but she's only open until she sells out. So you want to go. Yeah. Her stuff's fabulous. There's Lila's little house that has ice cream, but she's open just whenever she's open. So I can't tell you her hours. It's sort of, but her stuff, her ice cream's delicious. And there's a bike shop at the front of town. And then the post office is open, where you have the little P.O. boxes, like the old time, the numbers painted in there. And that's only open, I think, nine to 11 on Saturday and 8 to 10. But it's a neat thing to come see that there's actually, a, yeah. you know, the one of the, I think it's from the 1860s, probably, the post office. It's really old.
Yeah. And our office, Alabama Mountain Lakes, we actually used to be in Mooresville. I think where the bakery is.
You were
now.
Exactly. Y'all were where the bakery was for years. Isn't that funny? And then now there's the bakery. But yeah, it's a neat little place to park and ride your bikes. And, you know, it's it's because it's flat. There's no stoplight. I mean, it's tiny. There's like 50. It says 58 on one of our shirts from the census when we did it like 10 years ago. Maybe 52 or 53. We have to update our shirt. But it's just a great. It's like stepping back in time. So I encourage you, if you're through there, most people don't even either know it's here, or people have no idea. And they'll say, oh, Moore's Mill. I know where that is. I'm like, no, not Moore's Mill. That's over on the other side. It's Mooresville. So a lot of people, it's interesting. It's either I find you're aware or you're unaware that it even exists.
Yeah, they moved. I started just a couple of months after the office moved to Decatur here. So I missed getting to work in Mooresville. I hate that.
I know.
That would have been so cool to work there. So 1818 Farms has won several awards. Can you tell us about some of those?
Oh, yeah. So probably, you know, it's really exciting. In 2019, we were 1818 Farms. I was named Woman-Owned Business of the Year for Amazon. So that was just like really such a nice award. And it, you know, happened. I think I was in Seattle accepting the award in February of 2020, or March, right when COVID came. So, you know, that kind of, you know, changed a little bit. You know, things have, you know, were different since then. And then I think the last year I was named one of the women who shaped the state. And that was a great honor, just because, you know, I love Alabama. I've been here my whole life, and hope that I am a leader and inspiration for other people, to, especially women who are trying to start their own business, to have that confidence, you know, to try something new. Because I say, look at me. I mean, I was just going to have a little family farm, and here's where we are now. But I hope that, you know, to be an inspiration for people to have that confidence and get a plan and go out, you know, try and follow their dreams. And also I tell people, but don't expect it to happen overnight. It's 10 years later. You know, I hear a lot of people who will message me and say, I just can't sell enough flowers. I said, I've been doing this for 10 years. You know, it did not happen. You want to see the incline, you know, sales going up, but you just can't overnight, you know, start your business. It's rare that you're going to be as successful as you want to be. That's why you keep setting goals and working hard and trying to grow the business. So I hope that that's a lot of what people see from 1818 Farms and from myself.
That is so cool. I remember those awards and thinking, so well deserved. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Okay, so we ask our Facebook followers, before we do a podcast episode, what questions they would like answered. And we've answered a lot of them. We got a lot of good questions. But the winning question is there any type of program or apprenticeship with 1818 Farms where someone can learn how to start their own cut flower garden?
There isn't. I've never done that before. Now, years ago, I was going to do like a farm day, like come out and just kind of see what we do in the day of a life. You know, mm-hmm. a day in the life of us. And yeah. I don't know if it got rained out. I can't remember exactly what happened, but I haven't. And I think part of that is you would have to be with me for a year to truly learn how to do this, do a flower business, because it is, a lot of people say, I have someone who I've known for a long time who just started working with us, who actually helped do our irrigation, you know, has been involved, but he's like, where's this written down? And I'm like, it's not written down. It's in my head. Like, I know by this day, the anemones and ranunculus have to be ordered. And it seems like it would be ridiculous that I'm having to order them in April and I'm not going to get them till September and I'm not going to plant them till November. But I just know that, you know what I mean? There's so many things that happen. And probably we talked about it a little bit, the bloom stroll. A lot of people, I think the thought is flower farm, you really are just from spring, you know, late spring to fall, that's your season. Where in reality, our season is 12 months long. There's no downtime, especially in the way that we have scaled our business to include pressed and dried flowers. So it's something like, you know, I've had people from around the United States say, hey, can I have your time? You know, if it's something short, I'm willing. But once we get into like, okay, they need 3 hours of my time, then I can charge a fee. But really, to learn the business, I think to learn it well, I should rephrase that. To learn it well, you need to be with me for a season.
Okay. So what advice would you give someone who just wanted to have just, you know, grow some zinnias, just grow some things in their own backyard. Like what tips would you give them starting out?
Well, first of all, the main thing that I would say is really start simple. Start with things you know you can be successful with, because I think a lot of times that's when people get discouraged, is they try something really that's difficult to grow, you know, that's hard to grow. Know your climate, know what works. I mean, there are a lot of things, and I think we talked about this at the workshop. Like, I'll have people say, oh, I planted bachelor buttons in April and they fell. Well, in our climate, which a lot of people don't know, they should be planted in September to October. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a lot of things that you don't know on the seed packet that you need to know, but start with things like a great cutting garden. I would have zinnias for sure. Then you'd want to grow some filler. So maybe a basil, or you can do cosmos, which is a great filler, but also has the flowers in there. I love this year a new variety of verbena that I grew. If you remember, it looked like a fairy garden, the purple tall flowers that gives you some air. And then like gomphrena is always, you know, always a favorite in any type of celosia here in North Alabama, which some people, if you might've heard your grandparents call it a coxcomb, it looks like velvety. It's a velvet look. It doesn't really look like a flower, but it's more like textures and it feels like velvet. Those things, they love the heat so much. This is like a great thing. And you need kind of a little larger area because they're not as much cut and come again as you are with those zinnias, the gomphrena, the cosmos, and a filler. But, you know, you kind of get a few cuts, but you get one major cut and then some other smaller stems come up. But those, just try and start yourself up for success. You know, don't try and grow like the lisianthus, the starting from seed, are so difficult. You know, just make sure you're being attentive and really planting the kind of things that you can have success with at the right time.
Yeah. Okay. Those are some good tips. And I actually grew some zinnias this year. I was so proud. I need to take a picture, and they're very sparse, but I have some growth and I'm so excited. So I'll have to send you a picture of my zinnias that I grew.
Please do.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for being on here today with me. I've loved talking with you more. And tell our listeners where they can find 1818 Farms on social media.
Oh, yes, sure. So just look for 1818 Farms, 1818 Farms on Facebook, Instagram. We're on Twitter and then TikTok, a little bit on TikTok. We're trying to get better on TikTok, but so much to manage. And then on YouTube, I mean, if you're looking for like the person who's asking about what can you teach me? I provide a lot of information about preparing your beds, building a low tunnel, when to harvest a zinnia, how to pinch a sunflower. And then those are great things. And then I also just signed up as an expert with Bloom TV. And so that I have a couple episodes there, and it's sort of, Bloom TV is like the network for all things flowers, but it's a streaming platform. So it's more like a Netflix. So you have to subscribe. But that's a great way. If you love flowers, you can find anything about flowers. Edible flowers, how to, you know, use flowers in your home, landscaping. I mean, anything you can think about flowers, it is on Bloom TV. So that's really exciting for us. So that's another way that you can find information about. And then our website is just 1818farms.com. And that's where you can shop. And you also have the list of the events and workshops and, you know, just a little bit of everything is there on the website. It's kind of your go-to place.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely give them a follow. You will definitely thank us, with all of the little lambs and the sheep videos that's on Instagram and Facebook. So yeah, y'all will be glad that you did. Okay. If you're listening to us on Apple Podcasts, we would love for you to leave us a written review to let us know what you think about the podcast. We're doing a little contest right now. So when we hit 10 reviews, we're going to do a giveaway, and then we're going to do some giveaways at the milestones after that. So please subscribe and leave us a review. And North Alabama's social platforms are linked in the description. Thanks for joining us, and we'll be back next time with more about North Alabama's unexpected adventures. This has been another episode of the Unexpected Adventures in North Alabama podcast, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network, hosted by Malia Hames and produced by Relic.